Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, welcome to Beauty Talk. I'm your host, Janice Tennell, for today, Sunday, October 11th. Again, welcome to the show. We're glad to have you here tonight. We have an exciting show planned. Our guest tonight is Roshar, and he'll be on in a few minutes. But first, I want to send you over to my sister, Denise, who has a little bit of beauty news. And let me bring her on again. Hold on. Are you there?
Good. I'm here.
Sorry about that.
Good evening. No problem. Good evening and welcome to the show. I wanted to talk just a few seconds about something. It's an old article, but I'm not sure how many people have heard of it. I got this from Cosmetics Business, and it's basically about old makeup found to contain meningitis bacteria. Out-of-date makeup products have been found to contain unsafe levels of potentially harmful bacteria in a series of tests conducted at the London Metropolitan University. In a study commissioned by beauty retailer Essential, the university tested five products sent in by UK beauty consumers. Four of these tested positive for a strain of bacteria known to cause meningitis. The university tested a four-month out-of-date foundation, a still-in-date lip gloss, a 9 months out-of-date blusher, a 10 months out-of-date lipstick, and a 4 months out-of-date mascara. Now, I could read on and on, but...
Did you say a still-in-date lip gloss?
Yes, still-in-date lip gloss. And I think,
wow.
Let's see, that was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 products, and I think out of the 6, 4 tested positive for the bacteria. Now, I could read on and on about some of the other things that were found in some of these products, but I can't pronounce these things. Basically, some of this bacteria, of course, leads to different wound infections, and then, of course, it's a key suspect in the development of acne. So you have to really think seriously about some of the old products that you're carrying in your kit. You know, I think everybody knows how long is too long. You know, when you can start to smell, you know, when lipsticks start to smell funny, or, you know, you kind of know how long, you know, to keep a mascara. And then with your, like, your blush, your powder blush, your pressed powders and your eyeshadows, you know, I mean, after a while, like I said, you kind of know how long is too long. So just make sure we're kind of, like, getting rid of some of those products and replenishing them. I know some people it could be a financial thing where they can't just, you know, get rid of products and replenish as often as they would like. But just be, you know, very careful in how long you're keeping this stuff.
Right.
And I think the last show we talked about a product, and I just wanted to talk really quickly about something that I purchased yesterday at Sephora. And it was interesting because Melissa Street did a Periscope today about some a makeup haul that she got from the mall. She talked about a lot of the products that she purchased at Nordstrom and Sephora. And one of the particular products that she purchased at Sephora were different, like, facial masks, like hydrating masks, things like that. And she had quite a few of them. And the one that I purchased yesterday is by Karuna, and it's a hydrating face mask. It's infused, it's a, you know, cloth mask that's infused with serum. It's for dry, dull, dehydrated, and sensitive skin types. Their mission is to restore and retain moisture. And the solution to this would be, the ingredients in the mask is natto, which is a Japanese soybean, and it retains skin natural moisture, hyaluronic acid, which infuses moisture, and then Chinese licorice, which helps to renew damaged skin. So I'm going to try this, and I'm kind of going to post pictures and a little review on our Beauty Talk Facebook page about what I thought about these face masks. But do yourself a favor and stop by Sephora and pick up some of these face masks. They're not that expensive. Some of them are like $6, $8, $9, not extremely expensive. But then Sephora has their own brand of facial mask as well. I think like eye mask and then face mask as well. But not just if you – the one thing I wanted to say about Sephora was, these are all the rage at Sephora now, these facial masks, but also just other products – other Korean beauty products are all the rage now at Sephora. So just do yourself a favor and check some of that stuff out and just kind of get a little educated about what's not just trending at Sephora, but what's trending in beauty.
Absolutely.
So our guest tonight is an international makeup artist based out of New York and L.A. And for some of our new listeners, and new followers that we have since the last time he was on the show, I'm going to let him reintroduce himself. So, welcome to the show, Rashar.
Hello. Thank you guys for having me.
Absolutely. Welcome. I'm glad you could be on with us tonight.
From the last time when I chatted with you guys, I always had so much fun. So, when you guys mentioned the opportunity, of course, I jumped to it.
Yeah, it was a great conversation the last time you were on. I can't even remember how long ago that was. What, has it been 2 years already?
It's not been longer. It's been about. I've actually been doing a lot of traveling in between times, so it's, you know, my timing is so off these days. Like a day for me.
Exactly. Well, I want to get into that traveling a little bit, but first, can you just briefly like reintroduce yourself to all of the new people out there who are listening who didn't hear that first interview? Just give them a little bit of information about who you are and how you got started.
Sure. Well, my name is Rashar, and as you've already stated, I am a makeup artist. That's actually, even though I'm based in New York and L.A., I work internationally. And I really have known for more, not just doing regular looks. I'm known for the kind of out-of-the-box kind of element as far as makeup goes, but still remaining with the beauty element. I'm trying to think about how to describe that. In other words, I don't really do like typical. I'm not really known for like bridal looks or just regular beauty looks. I'm actually known for like transformation and completely changing the person from what they actually are, whether it be a human or gender or what have you, but in a fashion and beauty element. Oh, I think I lost about 30 calories saying that. But So as far as like my background, I used to draw and paint when I was younger. And when I say younger, we're talking about 8 years old. So I would, being so young, I was so captivated by the way light would actually hit the face or hit shapes or hit colors. And just lighting alone could actually change or emphasize that. And I would try to mimic that on a flat piece of paper. So the fact of turning like something like a circle into a three-dimensional sphere just by shading was something that just blew me away at an early age. And then the fact of like a rose, for instance, would be one color during noon, but a totally different color during sunset. And I guess this captivation, you know, just kind of kept with me and through my drawing and painting. But eventually, I did grow up in a really small Texas town, and I was a little punk rock kid back then, and this is the 80s. And let's see, small Texas town, 80s, punk rock, it doesn't really add up to being an enjoyable experience. So I ended up moving on my own at 15, and I always lived with girls, and I would do their, I started kind of getting into doing hair and makeup, mostly just to pay for the rent, because, you know, I was really too young to work. So I would do their hair and their makeup, and it was kind of an exchange for me to, you know, actually have a place over my head. So at that point, you know, makeup was really more of a point of survival. It wasn't really me thinking, oh, I'm going to be some makeup artist. I didn't even know what that was.
Right.
And then it just, it eventually, okay, I know this is a not a 6-hour show, so I'm going to try to find a way to keep it a little shorter. Eventually, I did get into, I realized that there was, you know, something out there as far as being a makeup artist. But, you know, most, just like most people that start off with makeup, the first thing they think of is not, you know, okay, I'm going to go work on my portfolio and jump out into the field. Their first thought is I'm going to go work at a cosmetic counter. And that was my thought process as well. And I did that. And eventually, you know, my idea wasn't, you know, being a freelance artist and, you know, going out. You know, I didn't know what that was yet. So my idea was actually, okay, I'm just going to work my way up the ranks in this cosmetic company and become a trainer. And then eventually people started coming to the counter and seeing my work and wanting to book me away from the counter. And, you know, you only have so many sick days when you work retail.
Right.
But then that's when it dawned on me, because I thought, wait a second, I can make in one day what it would take for me to working 40 hours in a week dipping lipsticks.
Right.
And that's when it dawned on me, okay, there is a profession out there. There is a need. There is a supply and demand, and maybe I can, you know, find a way to do that. And that's in a nutshell kind of the process on how I kind of got from being popping out of my mother's womb into being a makeup artist.
Now, at what age were you when you decided, okay, you know, let me go work at a counter?
Great, you're going to, like, expose my entire, like,
uh-oh.
No. I've been using those natto beans, so I look a little younger. What was that you said at Sephora? No.
Right.
At the age that I actually got started a little bit later. I would say when I started at the counter, that was in, okay, sorry, guys. I'm going to give it all away because I'm figuring out, I've got to figure it out loud. That was in 98. Mm-hmm. And so I was probably, wow, I think I was 24 at that time. So So I'd already gotten, by definition of what we think about, you know, getting started in this field or really any field, I guess it was kind of late. But in 2005, when I decided to go ahead and just leave the counter and do freelance, I was 31. So I think, because now I'm 41. So, and you know, actually, now that I'm kind of hitting a little bit on age, that's one thing that I always tell a lot of people too. Like, sometimes people will come to me and they'll be, you know, in their 30s or even their 40s, and they're like, you know, I really am interested in doing a career change or doing something different. And, you know, but I see all these people that are like 18 and 19, you know, running around and doing things. And, you know, I always tell them, you know, look at all the people that are successful and that are doing what you want to do. And they're usually, you know, they're in their 50s, they're in their 40s and 50s. So right. I tell people, you know, don't let age hinder you or make you think that, oh, you can't, it's not something you can achieve because it's too late. It's really not.
Well, that's right.
Did I cover 6 different topics in one breath?
But that's the truth, though. It's the truth. I mean, it's a lot of people who decide to really start late. I mean,
yeah.
I think I was in my mid-20s when I started. I mean, sometimes, because like you said, you know, when you were younger, even though you paint, you drew and you painted, and you still wasn't thinking of a career in makeup, you know?
Yeah.
We like these things, we're attracted to these things, but we're not thinking about a career. Nobody really talked about a career in makeup back in the 80s. You knew that it
existed.
Well,
there weren't a lot of artists back then either, as many as there are now.
Exactly, exactly. What could you say to artists out there who are trying to start and who are wondering if the counter is for them? What could you say to them about that?
Well, you know, one of the things that I have to say that I really learned that was valuable from working at a counter had nothing to do with applying makeup.
Mm.
It had to do with dealing with difficult people and remaining professional. Because I look back and I see, like, you know, when you're in a counter, you're dealing with the public, any kind of public service, or, you know, retail is really public service. So you're dealing with all different kinds of people, and you're in a situation where you could be in the line of fire for people that are looking for retail therapy. And in that case, you know, sometimes they may not be so pleasant when they come to the counter because they know you're not going to say anything to, you know, to if they say something to you that's not so nice. So they kind of let off steam sometimes. I mean, that was, you know, my case in a lot of situations. And I think that a lot of people that are working counters can identify with that. But what it ended up doing for me, I say, is that when now that I'm dealing with clients and major people, and, you know, everybody's different, everybody communicates differently, it has taught me to keep my professional demeanor, to not lose, you know, just fly off the handle, not show emotions that are not needed or appropriate. And that's actually, I think, something that's really helped me tremendously in my career. Because with, you know, as far as being makeup artists, you know, it's not like you just show up, you paint somebody's face, and that's it. Sometimes you're on set for 16 hours, 22 hours, 24 hours. Then you've got to run, and you've got to go to another job or catch a international flight, and you have had no sleep, and you've got to do a 22-hour job. And, you know, you're going to get kind of cranky.
Right.
So it really helped me to kind of hold all that together. But one of the things that I say that it wasn't makeup is that, well, for me personally, I work in the fashion industry. So what I found is that the type of makeup that we were learning was more, a little bit more bridal, or it was a little bit more for the girls that would go run around in the mall. You know, that typical kind of cut crease that we see all over the place.
Yeah.
You know, and and people do that cut crease and they don't understand why. And then, you know, they start deviating from the original thing about achieving balance with makeup because they don't know any better. They've been told, oh, you've got to do this particular look. So for me, when I stepped out away from the counter and went into the fashion industry, I kind of had to unlearn everything that I'd learned at the counter, which is kind of interesting because how, you know, to unlearn something is very hard because now you've got to unlearn and you've got to relearn a totally different thought process, which is quite a challenge. But when I did that and I started to going back to the roots of what makeup was and what it can achieve, and now not looking at, like, what other people are doing, or, you know, oh, I'm supposed to do this. I don't understand why, but it's because this person that has 6 million followers on Instagram does it.
Mm-hmm.
It's more. I look at more now at the way something that's God-given, which is light, and the way it
mm-hmm.
hits the anatomy. So light and anatomy have actually been the guide for me to relearn how to do makeup. And with that, I find that I've achieved more balance that way. And when you achieve balance, you can do, when you work with things that are balanced, you can do something really kind of out there, you know, really kind of crazy. I mean, you can make them blue, you know, their foundation blue, whatever. But if you achieve balance with it, it can still remain pretty and beautiful, and it doesn't read as, well, she got a lot of blue paint on her face.
Right.
You look at the image or the situation, and it's like you see blue, but it for some strange reason makes sense. Does that make sense, kind of, sort of, in a small way, but not really?
It makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now let's go back for a second, because you mentioned something about Instagram. You know, the person with the million followers on Instagram does makeup a certain way, so you feel like you have to do makeup that way. Just for you personally, how has social media helped your career, or has it hurt your career, or has it had any effect at all on your career?
Well, you know, social media is actually a double-edged sword, and it's something that is actually, you know, whether or not we like it, it's here to stay, and it's the sign of the times. So I tried for the longest time to, you know, I was like, I've got a Facebook fan page, I've got Twitter, do I really need to do all these other things? And I... finally, my assistant kind of forced me, one of my assistants in LA forced me to go on to Instagram, and I really didn't, okay, you know, one more extra thing. But then I noticed that people that I had not realized before that had were following me and my work from other parts of the globe were coming in, and, oh, I'm so glad I get to see your work, and, you know, what you do. And I realized, okay, evidently for me personally, or as an artist, there is a need for it. But then it started to expand. And as far as the way our culture has started to work, I've noticed that clients are starting to book other people, whether they be makeup artists, hairstylists, even models, sometimes even photographers. They're starting to book people based on the amount of followers they have on their social media. So they may have an artist that's kind of like so-so, but they've got a million followers. And then they have this other artist that's actually really good, but they only have 500. They're actually going to go with the person that has the higher followers. And the reason for that is because that company that's hiring them knows that they're going to post about their product. And now they've reached a million people they wouldn't have reached before.
Right.
So I always tell people, you know, nurture your social media, because, you know, people are hiring on based on that. For me, the way it's worked, affected my work is, like I said, it's put me more in touch with the international community. And I noticed once I started nurturing my social media, that's when my travel just blew up. I mean, for the past 2 years, my mail comes to Los Angeles, but I've only been in Los Angeles 4 months out of the year.
Oh, wow.
So I live out of a suitcase, basically. So I'm, you know, I'm in Asia almost 6 months out of the year. I'm in the U.S. maybe four. And when I say 4 months out of the year in L.A., that's not all grouped up in one. That's like sporadically, like
a month or two weeks
or so forth. So that's how I noticed with social media how it affected my work, is just it really put me in contact with other people that wouldn't have been able to be familiar with me. But it's very necessary as an artist but also too why I say it's a double-edged sword is that because of this, we have to be very careful about what we post.
Uh-huh.
Like I always tell people, you know, your Facebook fan page, I mean, your regular Facebook page as an artist or anything that's going to be deal with the public, set it to private. You know, you might have a client that is, you know, that might, you might post a picture of you eating an apple on a Saturday night, and that client might hate apples. And then they see you holding an apple, and they're going to say, I'm never going to work with that person. So they said, you know, that's just a crazy example. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Right. Yeah.
You know, I say like set, you know, things like that, you know, your personal things to private. You know, if you have an Instagram, don't post like what you had for lunch, because nobody really wants to see that. You know, try to post things that are related to what you want to do and be in your life.
Right. That's true. That's good advice. But, you know, one thing I noticed about, you were talking about the great artist with a small following. You know, when you sit back and you look at the situation, and you may find this with yourself, nine times out of ten, the great artist or the artist that's always working is going to always be the artist that has, you know, the social media, you know, the low social media following. Because when you're working all the time, you don't have time for
They don't have time, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it's just like trying to find... And that's an area where there needs to be balance as well, because if you social media is so important and you really want to increase your numbers because of the possibilities for work or other possibilities, like you were saying, you're traveling more and that kind of thing, you really have to find balance and the time to really take the time to actually get out there and be on social media.
Yeah. And those people that you're mentioning that, you know, are, you know, that are have been working a lot and, you know, they've already, you know, they're major artists and so forth. They may not have a huge following. The thing is with those people, they're already established, and they were established like in the 80s or in the 90s. So, you know, social media for them, you know, they were in way established way before all of this. So for them, there's not even, you know, it's, you mentioned one of their names, like nine times out of ten, every artist knows who they are. So that for those people, you know, it's not totally necessary. But for, you know, other artists that are trying to either get their foot in their door or they've started during the realm of social media and so forth, you know, that it's more advice kind of geared towards them. But it's good, too, because you know what? Now, these days, you know, you can actually, in a way, almost be your own agent because of social media. You know, you can reach these people. You can, you know, there's so much information now that, you know, being in an agency now these days isn't the end all. You know, like we're talking about, I'm doing all this traveling and, you know, I mean, I've got a 38-inch waist. I'm not starving. So, you know, but I'm also not... But I'm not in an agency. I'm not repped. I'm doing this all on my own. And I know there are many other artists that are successful in what they do, and they're not repped as well. So because of social media, you know, it kind of gives us an additional power. It's just that we have to understand how it works and know how to use it and take the proper guidelines to keep it from working against us.
Absolutely. Any experiences on social media that you wish you could turn around and do over?
Well, I had something recently. Well, oh gosh, there's several things. I mean, one thing I find that, I mean, this isn't so much something that happened to me, but it's something that's kind of important to communicate to other artists, is that you should always be 110% on your work. Like, don't sit there and think, oh, I'll let retouching take care of it. You know, always make sure everything is perfect. Because once it gets posted, if your name is tagged to it, you know, Google is forever. So 10 years down the line, if you know, you had an eyelash that was kind of coming off and you thought, oh, I'll just let the retoucher deal with it. 10 years down the line, you know, when you're very clean and polished with your work, that picture will come back to haunt you.
Mm-hmm.
But this is not from personal experience, but it's something that, you know, I've thought about and I tell people. But for me, there's one instance that recently I had to deal with, which was quite strange. There was a musical artist that posted one of my pictures, and it was a, you know, she's got like a million followers or something like that. And the picture was, she's very pale. She's naturally very pale. And I did these kind of graphic black lines that went across the face.
Mm-hmm.
And then the outfit, the photographer used these black cutouts that kind of were geometric shaped that went over the body. Now, the stylist had forgotten to bring gloves, so I just went ahead and painted her hands black so it would go with the geometry of everything. And this artist, which I was really shocked about this because, you know, I think that most artists kind of have an open mind, posted it and said, and put the words no on it. And
wow.
Immediately, even though, you know, this person was very fair with these black lines, graphic lines that went across the face and these black hands,
mm-hmm.
the hands being painted black somehow was translating to these people as being racist.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, her hands are black. She's not in blackface. It's just her
right.
hands because she didn't have gloves. And it was the first time that I've had to deal with something that was kind of, you know, political or anything like that, you know, in
right.
my work. And I mean, as you know, as far as like, you know, something like that, I was shocked about it because, you know, I travel to so many different countries and,
mm-hmm.
you know, Asia and, you know, I mean, so that thought process was the furthest from my head because for me, I always tell people, you know, you have to accept all cultures and study cultures because that's where you can pull your inspiration and a lot of your power from.
Right.
So that was something recently that happened that was new. And one thing that it did teach me a lesson, though, as far as social media goes. And it taught me that as far as social media goes, negative publicity is still publicity.
Right.
And even though that had a kind of a negative connotation, unintended, but I guess where that artist was trying to put it, I gained like 4,000 followers that day.
Oh, wow.
And the picture had 18,000 likes on her page. So that's another thing, too, is like, you know, you just understanding this new tool and when you see stuff like that and, you know, if something happens to you as far as a post, you know, as long as it's not, you know, a picture of you stripping on a bar and, you know,
mm-hmm.
well, I don't know, that could help some people get jobs.
Right.
Maybe not me. I did say I had a 38-inch waist, so.
Right.
Anyhow. So, sorry I'm talking
wow.
so fast. I have a lot
Oh, no.
I'm the type of person I really like to share my experiences and I don't mind, you know, I don't mind at all. And I've got so much experiences and information that, you know, when I start to talk, I just talk and keep going.
Quite all right. Well, we're loving what you're saying. So you're fine.
Well, thank you.
Let's talk a little bit about this travel that you're doing, and you're doing a lot of
yeah.
teaching. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know if this is the next thing on your schedule, but coming up very soon, you're going to be here in Atlanta.
Yes.
So tell me about that.
That's actually coming up on this month on the 18th and 19th. So I guess that's next week.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of requests for Atlanta and I thought, you know what, I haven't been there yet. I should just, you know, go and, you know, meet my fellow artists there. And it's something that I'm actually quite excited about because, like I said, I haven't been there yet.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I will be teaching. Oh, it's a 2-day workshop, and the first day is me, you know, talking about, you know, doing demos and talking about that, and then the second day is the hands-on portion. And I always tell people that during the hands-on portion, you have to incorporate 3 things that you've learned through the course of the day. And it kind of gets people, it forces people to do something they wouldn't normally do and mm-hmm. to look at things differently. And, you know, even though, you know, I do things that are a little bit out there, the basis, the roots of it is light and anatomy. So even though, you know, it may be something kind of, you know, interesting, like an, you know, circus alien mermaid or whatever, you know, the thing is like the way I'm looking at it is, and approaching it is the same person as same way a person that approaches a bridal client could look.
Right.
And because you're looking at the way light hits the contours, you're looking at the highlighting, you're looking at the definition of the face. And what I do with my classes is I try to get people to expand their thinking to where they're not really looking at what it is exactly that's in front of them. They look at what the possibility could be. Because even mm-hmm. though you have, like, people will deal with, like, civilian clients, like brides or, you know, people for events, you know, it's not like everybody's working with a 15-year-old Russian model. So you have to be able to look at the,
right.
This particular client and know that there's certain ways to trick things to make them look, you know, to make the eye look larger or make the lip look fuller or things like that, not getting caught up exactly on what they see directly in front of them. So
right.
I've had a lot of really interesting responses from it, and it's interesting because people have a tendency, I'm not trying to toot my own horn, I'm just mentioning this, people have a tendency to get a little emotional for the class
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
I guess what I start talking about is things that, you know, one of the reasons why we do what we do as far as artists, you know, the way we draw a line has everything to do with, like, who our best friend was when we were 8 years old, our favorite song when we were 15, the street that we lived on when we were 18. All these things make us who we are, and it makes who we are is where we pull from creatively, and that changes each time. So it, you know, it'll be different 6 months from now because of our experiences. That's why somebody does something creative and they're like, wow, I really like this. I really want to do this on another model later on, or maybe a different photographer. And they go back 6 months to recreate it, and they can't get it down the same way as they originally did. It's because that artist has changed within that time period.
Right.
It's very zen, but it's I talk about the fact that, you know, where we pull from what we do, it's not just from, you know, research and things like that. It comes from another place, you know,
right.
And in the end, you know, this is another thing too. I always tell people, you know, remain humble and, you know, be nice, be kind, because this gift is not yours. You're a vessel. You're just a vessel. You're just communicating, you know, through your body, through your arms, through your brushes and your pigments, you know, this creative line that comes from somewhere else. And, you know, it's just that our experiences help mold it into a certain way that we can communicate it in a way that is palatable for somebody else to actually understand. Does that make sense?
It makes plenty of sense.
Or do you guys have the button on the, you have the button, hand on the button, like the mute button right now?
No.
Like, oh my gosh, what is this guy talking about? He's so strange.
Quite all right. I was going to ask you next. Well, what inspires you creatively?
What inspires me creatively? You know, what inspires me first is when my subject first walks in and I see the way the light hits their face. And for me, I'm actually, I don't know if this means anything to anybody, but, oh, it means something to you. You're a Capricorn, yeah?
Say that again.
Denise, aren't you a Capricorn?
No, Scorpio.
Denise?
No, Scorpio.
Oh gosh, I kept thinking you were.
I heard you say that yesterday, and I was like, oh, maybe he's talking about another Denise.
I thought it was you. I'm sorry. Maybe because the questions and the answers were going so fast, I wasn't.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm one of those people that just by nature I kind of think in references, and pictures flash in my head. So when my model or my subject will walk in, something will flash in my head, like she might resemble somebody. Or something like an actress from the 40s or the 60s or a singer or something. And it just flashes. And it's almost like I get inspired by that first second that I see them. But when I'm doing a shoot and the makeup is something that has to be a part of the teamwork, you know,
mm-hmm.
I never put my own stamp on anything initially, because what I do is I want to know how the photographer is going to shoot it. What does the wardrobe look like? What's going on with hair? What does the model look like? And then I will actually, you know, mold the idea around that, because you want it really, with whatever you do, you want it to all be cohesive and work together. Because if you're doing something like, you're doing this kind of like slightly gothic kind of feel, but they're wearing like this Laura Ashley bright pink like muumuu dress,
mm-hmm.
it's not going to fit. You know? And the thing is the person's going to look at it and think, you know, the viewer will look at it and think, okay, you know, this, there's not a balance. It doesn't make sense. And it's hard for them to feel the understanding behind the makeup. It's hard for them to get past it, I guess. I've learned through my experiences that, especially with working with photography, that psychologically we go through several steps. And what it is when people first look at an image, the first thing they look at is the photography. The second thing they look at is the model. The third
mm-hmm.
thing is the wardrobe, if there is wardrobe. And then the fourth is hair and then makeup. And I'll give you an example. You know, like when you're flipping through a magazine and like there's like a new guest ad, right? And you open
right.
it up and you say, you know, the photography is on point. So you don't notice that. But the model's nose is kind of crooked. So the first thing you think of is, wait, why is guest using this kind of model? Don't they have a budget? And then you just flip the page.
Right.
You didn't even get to the makeup.
Right.
So that's how that psychological split second thing, those levels work. And the thing is people do that when they're looking at your images. We do that. It's just a natural response. So that's why you want to make sure that whatever you do, it works and is appropriate with the rest of the team.
Right.
Sorry. Did I jump?
No. No, you're fine. But you know what? I sat there and I chuckled a little because I'm like, you're so right. You know, I think we've all, you know, have looked at an ad and spotted something that kind of just took us away from the whole point of it all, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well,
so
the thing is,
I
that when,
agree. And Rochard,
when you're
don't,
able.
Don't,
yeah.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say, don't worry about, you know, when you finish saying something and we don't respond, because sometimes I get so caught up in what you're saying, I'm
okay.
actually visualizing what you're saying. So don't think that, you know, oh, I don't get it, or, you know, it's just that, you know, it takes me a second to come down from what it is that I'm visualizing. So,
no, I hear the silence, and I figure they've got their finger on the mute button and they're talking.
No.
Yeah, I am.
Well, you know, the reason why I'm being silent is because a lot of times my sister and I wind up talking over each other. So as soon as the guest finishes talking, one of us will start talking. So I'm trying to learn to just give it a second and then talk.
Balance.
Right, right.
So don't think it's you. No.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So talk a little bit about some of the places that you've been traveling to, and tell us a little bit about how they're different in their approach to makeup, or very similar, how they're similar or different in their approach to makeup?
Well, one thing that I find that's really interesting is that in Japan and in China, you know, like how in the U.S., you know, we always kind of upturn the eye. We kind of list the eye, because for us, that's kind of, that's actually a sign of youth. Even when you, you know, when you see those housewives on television and they're kind of searched with their eyes just kind of going up, you know, that's, you know, they're getting paid to get that done. You know, that's our idea of beauty and youth is to turn the eye. But in Japan and China, that's actually viewed as being evil looking. It's more of a downturned eye, kind of almost like a little bit of a droopy downturned eye. So when I go to Japan, I have to change my thinking a little bit, and I've got to pull the eye down on the outer corner in order for it to be palatable and to be viewed as being beautiful. It's very interesting. Like, you know, just, you know, you know, because we're separated by miles and miles of water and mountains and distance. So people's ideas of beauty and so forth have evolved differently than ours. But see, knowing that and being aware of it will actually, is it's something that actually can inspire you again for another look. Because it'll teach you to do something differently, huh?
Right, and that goes back to what you were saying earlier about studying and appreciating all cultures.
Yes.
Yeah, so when you, you know, when you go in there, you already have an understanding of kind of what's accepted and what's not when it comes to beauty.
Yeah, because, you know, in the end, you know, depending on what it is, you know, like I said, we can't really put our stamp, you know, just stamp a look on everyone. We have to think, too, psychologically, how do colors, how do all these, the placement, you know, how is that going to affect a person? If I use a red and a purple eyeshadow, psychologically, that could be referred to the viewer as being a bruise or being something that kind of feel a little violent.
Right.
Because the thing, too, what I've also learned through my career is that, you know, because of what we're doing, well, okay, I'll share this with you. I remember I was at IMATS, I think it was in New York, and this girl came up to me, and she was in tears, and she was like, oh, my gosh, you know, I'm getting – this sounds so weird. I don't mean it to sound ego-y. This is for a point, okay?
Mm-hmm,
she was
right.
Like, you know, she's like, I'm so glad to meet you, and she was just crying, and I've never, you know, been around that. So I you know, I'm, you know, like I said, I'm a Capricorn, so we don't really show emotion too readily. So I was looking at her like, oh my God, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? And okay, Richard, give her a hug. So I gave her a hug, you know, and I'm like, it's okay, you know, nice to meet you. But I was curious. I was like, why does somebody have such an emotional response to something as like makeup? And then I realized that, you remember when I was saying that when you draw a line, you're, which is just an example, you're pulling from personal experience. Well, the thing is sometimes people subconsciously can feel something that mimics one of their personal experiences just by that line.
Gotcha.
And they get that emotional response from it. But just like those levels where everything is on point, the only way that you can achieve that is by making sure everything, you know, the photography, the model, everything fits. So then that way they don't get blocked and they can feel what you did, not see what you did. They feel what you did. So now the makeup doesn't become like, oh, that's really cool makeup. They're like, wow, that's an interesting experience. So it's something interesting that I've learned, but
No, I was going to say, when you're over in some of these other countries, you're working and you're teaching, or is it a mixture
depends.
Of both? Or
it can be a mixture of both. In Japan, gosh, I do a lot of work in Japan, and I'll do shows. I'll do fashion shows. I work on some of the hair shows. I do some of the editorials, and I do some teaching. So I do some teaching every now and then, wherever I go, because I try to also make sure that when I travel, I'm not just there for like 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
Because after a while, I hated seeing, you know, like Taipei through a cab window. I wanted at least a day or two to actually experience it. So I'm lucky enough to where sometimes if I have the time, I'll make sure to schedule in like another week or something to where I can do more. And things will fall into place if another company or somebody else finds out, oh, you're there for a little bit longer. Let's book you for something else. Of course, I have the choice
right.
on whether or not I want to take it. But as you can see, I really don't mind talking. So it's like, okay, yeah, I'll just... sure, I'll teach something. I don't mind.
Let me ask you this. And I'm not sure if I'm phrasing this properly, but
sure.
You know how some people find it difficult to think creatively?
Mm-hmm.
How do you get there? Like, what is your process for getting to that creative state? Or is it just something that happens so naturally? I mean, does it happen? Because I think you kind of touched on it a little bit earlier. Is it something that kind of happens just based on what inspires you?
Not necessarily, because people can be inspired by something, but they don't know how to translate it.
Exactly.
Like, it's one of those things, like, you know when you're, like, standing in the mirror and you're like, oh, my gosh, I look so fat. But then you see your best friend, like, oh, my gosh, you need to eat a burger. You're losing too much weight.
Right, right.
You know, our brain will register a little differently. So what I always tell people, I say several things. First off, and I kind of teach this in my classes, is that you have to get the point to where you can – rely and listen to and be comfortable with your intuition because your intuition does not steer you wrong. And I work a lot intuitively. I'll do something and then all of a sudden I have a thing like I feel like I need to do this, and I throw it on and it's something that actually makes the look. With some of my students, you know, during the hands-on portion, you know, they'll look at me and I'll get the flash in my head or that feeling of what it is that they need to actually do when they've already halfway done through makeup. And they stop me and they say, I'm looking at it and I feel like I should do something else. And I get curious and I ask, what is it you feel like you should do? And what she described was the exact same feeling that I had. And I realized the intuitive process is something about, like, we're opening up that creative channel. And, you know, where that channel comes from depends on your definition. But it seems like, you know, if you can trust yourself and allow yourself to listen to your intuition, things kind of start to naturally fall into place. But the thing is like we have to get re-exposed to it because, like I said, there's so much information out there that's just kind of wrong. You know, we've got like, you know, contouring right now is a trend. And we've got all these crazy, like, contouring YouTube tutorials and doing this. And the thing is like people will look at it and they follow it and they don't know exactly why they need to do it or why it is, because they just see it. They're not thinking about light and anatomy. So they miss certain areas that they would actually have to hit, which throws off the balance. Which an end doesn't look like it's supposed to. And whenever I contour, I'm not contouring because of the trend. I'm contouring because I know that the flash from the photo is going to take out 35% of whatever I do. And I know they're going to look flat. So I have to go back to being 8 years old and doing that shading of a circle to make it three-dimensional while it's on a one-dimensional image. Being the photograph.
and working backwards. I'm doing the shading on the three-dimensional image to where when it becomes a one-dimensional image, it still looks three-dimensional. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Now this doesn't have really much to do with what we're talking about, but it just popped into my head. Because,
sure.
You were saying that contouring is a big trend now, and I'm thinking it's a big trend of something that's so basic, like such a basic principle for, you know, a corrective makeup. And I saw on a couple of makeup artists' website where, you know, they kind of listed their services and how much they charged, and it was like they charged extra for contouring and highlighting.
Are you serious?
And it just kind of, yeah, it just kind of blew me away. Like, really?
Yeah, that should be within the application.
Right. It's like, it's sad, though, that we're making such a big deal out of contouring.
Well, I think, like I said, it goes back to people not understanding the reason for it. And they're just seeing the posts and seeing that it's a trend at the moment. And they're kind of doing the way I did initially where, you know, working at a counter or, you know, being taught a certain way of doing everything and not understanding why, but being told this is how it is. And then once I stepped away and just looked at, like, just the anatomy, everybody's got a skull. Everybody's got an eye socket. You know, everybody, at least I hope. anybody listening, if you don't, I'm so sorry. But I can paint one on you. That one person that's listening is probably like, darn it, I'm going to block him.
Right.
But, yeah, so it's like once you go down to the basics of it, when you see all of this information out there, it gives you that power to look at it and be like, okay, there's a reason why this doesn't feel right. It's because it's not actually something, the shading is not something that naturally occurs in nature in the sense that they'll forget, they might contour the cheekbone, but they'll forget to contour the temple. And if you just look at the person across from you and see the way the light hits them, you see that the shading is not just underneath the jawline or underneath the cheekbone. It's also in the temple. It's also in the inner corner of the eye. It's also down the side of the nose. So all you're really doing is for the contouring is you're just freezing that moment where the light is capturing and the shadows are capturing that to where when you take them and you move them in front of a photographic flash, it's still there. Does that make sense?
Right.
Because if you get that flash, it goes off, then they look, you know, they might have these great chiseled cheekbones, but then they look like a moon pie because the photo, you know, the flash flattened them out.
Right. Right. So well, now you that you've think... explained that, the I'm just hoping that everybody that's listening, you know, they will adjust the pictures that they post on Instagram now. Let's see if anything changes.
You know what I tell people too, like, you know, because, you know, it's one thing to explain this, you know, like, and to hear it, but it's another thing for an individual to actually see it. When you look at the person across from you, squint your eyes. And when you squint your eyes, what happens is you don't really see color so much. You see contrast. So it's easier. It can be easier to see that. Hairstylists do that actually too, to make sure that you've got the symmetry of the hair just by kind of squinting your eyes. And you know what, when I go back to like talking about transformation and talking about not exactly just, you know, getting caught up in what the person is in front of you, I have this big deal about, you know, that phrase, eyebrows are sisters, not twins.
Right.
Okay. You know what, as a makeup artist, it is your job to make them twins.
Right.
So if one eyebrow is slightly droopier than the other, it's your job to not look at like, okay, well, that's just how her eyebrows are. I've got to follow it. No, your job is to actually make them look symmetrical. So it's, I guess when I'm in person and able to kind of demonstrate this, it's a lot of, it can be a lot of, well, wait, that makes sense. I've always kind of thought of this in the back of my head.
You know, because a lot of the stuff to people may kind of feel familiar, but it's like once they actually are able to hear something being verbalized and applied by, you know, somebody else, it's like, okay, yes, I've felt that. I've had that feeling before, but I always questioned it because I wasn't sure. You know, I guess it goes back down to that intuitive process. Do I sound like I need to be, like, living on some hippie farm with a whole bunch of makeup brushes?
No.
I know I sound so zen, but, it, you know, it's just the way, it's the way that I look at it, that I approach things. And, you know, it's something that, you know, it's really about the roots of everything.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. What are you doing? I mean, not what are you doing, but is there anything that you haven't done in your career, that you would like to do? And
maybe
I'm
like
talking
a book.
Not, and I'm talking
be
not,
on the beach in Bali for 6 months. I don't know.
And I'm not talking about long term, you know, goals. I'm talking about something that you want to do like now.
That's a good question. You should have sent me this question earlier so I could have, like, really thought it out.
A book,
you know,
maybe?
You know, I've had, that's funny that you mentioned that. Lately, I've been having requests to come out with a book, but, mm-hmm. and I've thought about the possibility of it, but, you know, there's so much legal stuff that goes on, because if I create a book, I'm going to have like the model and then the booker and then the photographers and the stylists and everybody
mm-hmm.
saying, where's my cut? So
right.
I think because people have actually asked me about this, I might possibly, and this is just in thought, maybe organize something to where I could come out with it, because it seems to be a request a lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I do have something that is a little bit of extra news. I'm actually coming up with a line of eyelashes.
Ooh. Nice.
And they're going to be released in November. I'm working with an Australian company called Model Rock Lashes. And one of the things that I like about these guys is that it seems like in the U.S., there must be one manufacturer that does everything
right.
eyelashes, because they all
yes.
look the same, right?
Same. Right. Yes.
So this company, the girl that owns it, Raylene, she's just an eyelash addict. So she like creates and designs all of these lashes that are natural, but they've got a little bit of an extra kick because of their placement. And what they do, and it's modelrock.com or modelrocklashes.com, and so they contacted me, and we started kind of working together, and we're creating a line. I believe it's 12 lashes that are going to be released in November, and I wanted to do it because I kind of cut up and repurpose a lot of my lashes.
Mm-hmm.
And you, I rarely just use the strip. So I'll just kind of cut up three different pairs and then replace sections of it. And I thought, you know what, why don't I just kind of, you know, do something like that for this, you know, for this, and actually get it made into something. So it's not something that, well, okay, maybe there was a little bit of a thing of like, well, you know, great, I don't have to cut them up anymore. I can just grab it and just stick it on. But it's actually something
right.
that is will be available to others. As far as distribution goes, it will be available on their website in November. I will be speaking at IMAT Sydney, and that's when we're going to be releasing it. But I'm also talking to Nigel's and Friends in Los
mm-hmm.
Angeles, Alcone in New York, and there's a school called Makeup First School in Chicago about distribution or about selling them at their locations.
Oh, nice.
Can't wait for them to come out.
It'll be interesting. And the good thing is, like, these particular ones that we're doing, they're going to be permanent to the line. And they're like I said, they're kind of like, they're a beauty lash. So there are things mm-hmm. that are, I've cut up and things that will kind of make the eye look more rounder or bigger, kind of change the shape a little bit. And it's mm-hmm. not something that we already see in the market. And then next year, we're actually going to be coming up with a Richard limited edition. And these are going to be the more crazier stuff that I'm mm-hmm. kind of
gotcha.
Known for. You know, when I actually incorporate leather or paper or things mm-hmm. into the lashes. And those will actually be limited. But I figured, you know, keeping something that is for the everyday client or for the artist that mm-hmm. deals with everyday clients, they would be a little bit more appreciative of something that is permanent and something
right.
they could use for their regular gigs.
And then the
fun
so,
stuff no, will come on, and they'll have to just jump on that.
Now, what's going to be, like, the price range for these lashes? Because I noticed on their site, they have, you know, just all different prices for the lashes.
The price is going to be, I believe it's $17.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's comparable to, like, say, like the MAC lashes, but it's not as
right.
expensive
uh-huh.
as the Shuamura.
Gotcha. Right.
Nice. So, yeah, the price point's not going to be crazy. It's not like a $45 mink or mm-hmm. $100 mink eyelash or anything like that. It's going to be something that, you know, it's still affordable to other, you know, to other artists. And also, too, Model Rock Lashes does, I do believe that they give a pro discount as well.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
And then you should be able to use them a couple of times?
Yeah, they're going to be constructed, you know, as the idea of like a normal lash.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah, as long as – but, of course, we know that if you're going to use them a couple of times, you want to use them really on the same individual. You don't want to throw
– Oh, definitely, yes. That's what
a
I mean.
Lash on.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, that's
God,
one
yes.
thing. That's one thing that's a really big thing when I go to a lot of – when I do teaching, actually, in a lot of these other countries, is hygiene is something that is just not really touched on, even by a lot of schools that teach out there. So, like, for instance, in Japan, you cannot buy disposable mascara wands.
Hmm.
So people have to actually, like, take their mascara wand and clean it, you know, each time. Yeah, it's really strange. I was kind of shocked about that. But in Malaysia, you know, cleaning brushes, I really have to, like, jump on people about, you know, you've got to keep everything sanitary. Because what you said, like, in the beginning of the broadcast
yeah.
about meningitis, I mean, your subject does not look pretty if they've got, you know, if they curled up in a ball with meningitis. I mean, they might
right.
have some great Richard for Model Rock eyelashes on, but,
right.
you know.
Right.
If they got
well,
meningitis, it doesn't look cute.
No, it doesn't. I mean, I asked about, you know, being able to use them more than once, because I'm sure I know somebody's going to ask the question. Because when they come and they see the price, they're going to think, oh, I can go to Nigel's or Friends or wherever, and I can get, you know, lashes for $3 or whatever. So, you
and
know, that's
they
why
totally
I asked the question.
Can. They totally
mm-hmm.
can get them for $3. But the difference is that these have already been cut and repurposed in a way that, through my experiences and knowing, like, what I need to do to make an eye do something specific,
right.
you know, it's
mm-hmm.
already there for you. Because, like, we're talking about, like, it seems like a lot of lashes are kind of done here by the same manufacturer. In that case, yeah, you've got, like, a $17 lash from one company, and it's basically a dupe of a $3 lash.
Mm-hmm.
But this will be different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nice. I can't wait to see them.
Oh, thank you.
Congratulations on that one.
Thank you
so
much.
Tell us about, I know you talked about Atlanta, but tell us about do you have other upcoming classes already scheduled all over the world somewhere?
Yes, I'm actually fully booked until April. Well, I just got a booking today for May. So basically
oh,
I'm
wow.
fully booked until May of next year.
Oh, wow.
My next thing after Atlanta, I'm doing a workshop at Makeup First School in Chicago, so that'll
mm-hmm.
be the following week. I'll also be at the makeup show in Chicago, and
mm-hmm.
I'll be doing a demonstration at the Makeup First School booth. which is kind of, it's kind of, I don't usually do things at booths, but what I like about it is that in this case, it's not like IMAX or Fame Expo where, okay, you got an hour and a half to, to talk, do makeup, which translates with, you know, the way I talk, that means like 15 minutes to do makeup. So when I'm at the booth, I can actually really spend my time. So, and I have fun with like the styling, and I'll bring in wigs and stuff. And so I'm actually able to create something that's really, you know, very, I've had the luxury of time to. And it's kind of fun. Let's see, I've got And then directly after that, I fly to Sydney.
So we're going to go ahead and just book you for 2017 now so we can get you on the book. I mean, you're already booked it for May of next year, so
maybe
we'll get you on our books now.
it's kind of constant. I mean, I have, immediately after after Chicago, I jump on the plane to LA, and then the next day I've got to fly out to Sydney, where I'll be doing some workshops there, because, you know, also too, that's when we're releasing Model Rock at IMAT. So I'll be speaking at IMAT in Sydney. I'll be doing demonstrations in Sydney and in Melbourne. And then I have to be in Malaysia after that. Oh no, I've got to be in Taipei at the beginning of December, where I'm shooting and I also have a workshop. And then I'm going to be in Malaysia. And then that's until February. And then I'm going to be in Dublin, London, and then Barcelona in that month of March. And then April is Japan. So a lot of these classes, too, like, for instance, the one in Atlanta, if anybody's interested or if they're just totally tired of hearing me talk, they can actually book that class through ericacarrclasses.com. So it's ericacarr, C-A-R-R, classes.com. She's also the one that's been, you know, she's a great person. She's been helping me out handle it, because it's kind of hard to do this all, you know, the scheduling and organizing your flight and hotel and everything on your own. So she's been helping me out with that. But she's helping me organize with Atlanta, so that should be good to book through Atlanta. But then we're doing, like, Dublin, Ireland, and then London and Barcelona in March. And then April's Japan. So, and then April, May. And May, we're talking about South America.
Nice.
Yeah.
Now, this is what I wanted to ask.
Places I can get tan.
You mentioned Erica, and she's going to be our guest next Sunday. But talk a little bit about you guys' working relationship.
Well, Erica is somebody that it's, let's see, she's somebody that is, I don't know how to talk about that. I mean, she's professional. She's professional, but she actually gets my joke.
Because you guys have done, like, some classes together, right?
Yes, yes. Like, she's organized mine, and then she'll have her own classes on a separate date.
Okay.
And she does, you know, she teaches hair. She also has separate classes that she does where she teaches, like, business for the artist, which is something that's really important for a lot of artists, because, you know, they, you know, you're your own business person, and you know, they may not know things about taxes and invoicing and contracts and stuff. And she's a wealth of information for that.
Nice. So what are you working on tomorrow? What are you doing tomorrow?
I've got to go to the gym tomorrow.
Oh, you're working on Rochard tomorrow.
What am I doing tomorrow? I'm relaxing a little bit. I've got about 6 days before I have to head on to Atlanta, and you know I got to look good for my Atlanta peeps.
Right. Well, once you're gonna go to the gym and you're gonna work out all week, but then you're gonna come to Atlanta and you're just gonna blow it, because you will eat.
I've heard.
You will eat.
I've heard. You know what? I'm gonna work out all week. I'm gonna come to Atlanta, and I'm barely gonna be able to hold up a brush because I've like worked out far
so week.
Well, okay. My last question for you is now. I'm listening to you talk about your schedule, and and so you're talking about, you know, making some time for yourself to relax, work out, that kind of thing. I mean, does it get really hard? I know you're traveling the world doing what you love.
Yeah.
But does it get really hard? Like, do you feel like sometimes like you're missing out on life or missing out on, other things that maybe you want to do that has nothing to do with work?
You know, that's actually a really good question, because one of the things that, you know, when you become an artist or really anything in your field, you have to think about, okay, how far do you want to go in that? You know, are you somebody that just wants to kind of conquer the world? Or are you somebody that you're happy with staying in one particular location? And really, the definition of success for each person is different. They want different, people want different things out of life. For me, I love traveling. And you guys can hear it in the way I talk about, traveling and cultures and so forth. It's something that, by nature, it's something I'm really enthralled with. So I think loving to do that in general keeps me enjoying it, but also too at the same time, when you do this, it is very difficult to say be in a relationship. Relationships can kind of suffer a little bit if you're gone for 6 months,
right?
And then also too, being an artist, artists think very differently than normal people. We see things differently. Being able to find somebody that actually not only understands your way of thinking, but is comfortable in you getting up and traveling and trusting, the situation and the relationship. It's one of those things that it can be a little bit difficult to juggle. And then if you want to factor in kids, that can also be difficult too. So for me personally, found that, being on the road can be, can be, of course, a very lonely situation. But I've found the thing where I really love my personal time. I'm very comfortable with being just by myself.
Mm-hmm.
So if I want to go take myself out on a date to a movie and dinner, I would love to do that. And at the same time, it's so cheap because you're only paying for one person. So I think, for me personally, since I don't have, all of that, situation, it's like, I've got to make sure that, I'm strong with myself emotionally and mentally.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have children. I mean, I can barely take care of myself, much less a goldfish. So kids are out of the question. not equating children to goldfish. So nobody get upset.
right.
I'm just picturing Twitter just going like, Rashad called my kids goldfish, So there's that factor. And then, of course, I miss out, I do miss friends and certain, friends in New York and then friends in L.A. It does change, but at the same time, it's like, in the end, it's like, what do you want your career to be about? And, if you want your career to be the focus and to take off, you have to give 115% in order to get 100% out of it. And for me personally, it means that my personal life kind of goes a little bit on the side, but for me, that's okay. It's different for other people.
Right.
But I always say too that if you do have kids, if you do have, you know, kids or family or something like that, and you know, it's like, well, you know, I do want to go out there and I want to do this, I want to travel, I want to see things, and I always tell people, you really have to. You have to see what other people are doing. You can't just stay in one little, you know, in one little area. You have to kind of branch out. But when I say that, you know, I say it like, take a weekend if you can and go to New York or go to somewhere else. And, you know, just to be exposed, because we change a little bit every time we travel, you know, even if it's for a weekend.
That's true.
It is. I mean, even the way we might eat, sit, whatever, it'll be slightly different because we've absorbed something from of another experience. Which goes back to the original thing about how things change when you do create things creatively.
That's true. I'm telling you, I have thoroughly enjoyed this conversation tonight.
Thank you. Thank you. I always have such a blast talking to you guys.
Yes, it's been fun. I mean, we've kind of gone over the time, so I don't want to keep you longer. But
I'm already thinking about who's gonna be carrying Model Rock Lashes in January when we do our show. Like, is it going to be friends? Is it going to be Nigel? Who am I going to set my account up with so that I can order these lashes? You know, I'm already thinking
well,
like that.
I mean, we're always kind of in touch through social media. So, you know, maybe we'll even get to see each other doing IMAT. And that's the great thing about you guys is you guys are very supportive of other artists and getting information out there and really helping people share. And, you know, even with having me on the radio, it's like, you know, you've gotten me connected to other people that maybe are not familiar with me. So that's the great thing about you guys. And I just wanted to give you guys some props for that. So thank you.
Thank you
for contributing to the community.
Thank you. And
let
me just say that,
appreciate that.
That, you know, we have thousands of listeners all over the world. And it's like, we're even shocked at where, you know, about where some of these people are listening from. And we're like, oh my God, we didn't know we had somebody in, where is it in Africa? It's in East Africa. A girl reached out to us earlier in the year and we're like, oh wow. We didn't realize we reached so many people. So the thing is, it's great that so many people get to, you know, from all over the world who hasn't heard about you, they get to hear, you know, who Roshar is. So that's a great thing. And we have so many listeners just in a week's time, you know, people come back and listen to the show. And it's really good.
Well, good. And like I said, thank you guys, you know, because of you guys, you know, you're getting that information to that person that may be out there in East Africa that she wouldn't have been able to get that information before.
Absolutely.
So kudos to you guys for getting it done and for supporting other artists.
Absolutely.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much. So before you leave, I want you to shout out, like, your website and where you are on social media so those people who are listening, who just met you for the first time tonight, can start following you.
Sure. Let's see. My Instagram is Roshar Official. That's Roshar and then official, however you spell that.
Official.
I failed to mention that I am a high school dropout. So, remember I left town at 15.
Well, I know people who graduated from high school who still can't spell. I was going to say, I'm a college graduate and I still can't spell, so you're fine.
Okay, good. And then also, too, let's see, so Instagram, I've got a Facebook fan page, which is just Roshar, R-O-S-H-A-R. My website is www.roshar.com, that's R-O-S-H-A-R.com. And then I just started Periscope, which
I
saw you guys on. Yes. another social media thing that's kind of blown up that, you know, is great for artists to utilize because people like to see behind the scenes and they like to see that we're actually human.
Right.
So I started Periscope, and every now and then I'll post behind the scenes of some of my travels. And I'll even take questions as well. And that's, if you go under Periscope, just search Roshar, R-O-S-H-A-R, and gosh, I think that's about it.
Twitter.
Twitter, yes. Twitter is Roshar911, because for some reason there are about 400 Roshars on Twitter, and they're actors from India. So I thought I was the only one, but evidently not.
Boy, I tell you, Roshar.
It's funny, too, because people will look at my work and they think they have this preconceived notion on how I may actually be, which is probably quiet and mysterious or whatever. And I'm so not. As you guys can hear, I'm totally like, you know, I'm laughing and, you know, I enjoy what I do and I enjoy life. And I want everybody, you know, I'm one of those people, I want everybody around me to feel that and to experience that for themselves, to enjoy their life and, you know, not get caught up in certain things and just be able to expand. And that's why I'm comfortable with sharing whatever information I have or knowledge or even the way I do things is, you know, it's if we have an opportunity to do something for other people to, you know, make the world a little bit better, you know, why not?
Right.
That's right. Absolutely. Excuse me. Well, thank you so much for joining us again. We really do appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having
me. I'm sure we're going to connect at an IMAX or something like that really soon, but I'll be out of town on the 18th and 19th,
I'll be here in Atlanta. So if you want to go out and eat and all that great stuff, you let me know.
Oh my gosh, that sounds so good. That'll be so nice. I'm so excited about Atlanta. Okay.
It'll be nice.
Cool. Well, I'm excited to get there and to meet, you know, all the fellow Atlanta artists and, you know, just be able to create with them and think with them and, you know, learn with them. And I learn with them as well.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. Well, we're excited.
Thank you.
Keep us posted to, you know, all the new things that's happening with you. We're looking forward to the Model Rock Lashes.
Thank you.
And then the class coming up. So just when you have something going on, let us know. We'll make sure everybody else knows as well.
And just in the closing, again, if anybody listening is interested in the Atlanta classes, we do have a couple of slots. I said slots, not the other word. you're such a slot. We do have a couple of places open so that you can book that through ericacarclasses.com. And again, that's on the 18th and the 19th of this month.
Yes. And we'll post it on our Facebook page too.
Lovely. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Well, everybody out there, you guys have a great night. Thanks again, Roshar. Make sure Make sure you go out there and follow him. Roshar411 on Twitter, Roshar Official on Instagram.
911.
Roshar.
911.
I'm sorry. Excuse me. I messed up already. Roshar911.
Somebody else already has 411.
Do they? Yeah, really.
I don't know. Probably.
All right. So, good night, everybody. Thanks again, Roshar.
Good night, everybody, and good night, guys. Thank you again for having me.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.